It's the Zesty Garden. I'm your host, Brian Earle. And in with me today in the studio is Megan Dentenmeyer. She's USU's Forestry Extension Educator, and Frank Howe, who's with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources as a university liaison and also a USU adjunct associate professor. And we're going to talk about riparian areas and taking care of streams and rivers. And first off, I'm going to get this out there because I don't want to forget to ask, but on the 23rd of April is a workshop, 1 to 3 o'clock at Black Hawk Park in Logan. And why don't you tell me what that's all about?
So thanks, Brian. Thanks for having us today. There are many homeowners that live along the Logan River in Logan, and that's part of what makes Logan a beautiful place to live, is you can, in your backyard, have the Logan River. But this workshop is being extended to homeowners that have riparian riverfront property on their land, and folks that might want to learn a little bit about the importance of creating riparian habitat on their property, folks that might want to learn about creating bank stability, maybe buffering their property from the potential flooding that might occur on the Logan River. So this workshop is just an opportunity for folks to show up for 30 minutes, learn about how to plant shrubs and trees on their property strategically so that they might, create a whole variety of benefits for wildlife and their own backyard, and also just to take home some free shrubs and trees. So this is a targeted workshop for really anyone that wants to learn about the benefits of creating healthy riparian habitat.
So you don't have to be just from Logan. Anyone could come to this workshop.
This workshop is open to anybody really that just wants to learn about the benefits of a riparian habitat. And Logan City residents will be allowed to take home trees and shrubs to plant on their own property. So we have native species to choose from, and there'll be chokecherry, golden currant, water birch, and dogwood. So these are beautiful, beautiful trees and shrubs, and they are specifically selected to create bank stability, to create wildlife habitat, protect from erosion control, or protect and create erosion control. So these species have been selected by experts in the field, and they are going to do great if you choose to plant them in your backyard.
Frank, I'm going to ask you, so what constitutes a riparian area?
So a riparian area is really a transitional area between the stream itself and upland habitat. So upland would be dry grass areas. A lot of times people will plant pine trees and spruce trees in that.
Sometimes floods, like every,
yes,
that upper area might be every 100 years or something?
Yeah. So the upland we consider usually to be outside of the floodplain. But the area in the riparian zone will flood occasionally. And it sort of depends on how close you are to the river and how much your elevation is above the river as to how often it's going to flood. But we look at places like the toe of the river that's going to flood fairly frequently. There you'd have one type of vegetation, whereas you're up higher in the transition zone, you may plant something that needs a deeper taproot so it can get down into the water table more consistently.
You have, in this case, you're looking at the Logan River. And you have a river that goes right through the middle of the population. And this is not unlike other rivers in the state, like the Provo River or Emigration Creek. Or these are all going through populated areas, and most of them have been channeled. So what sorts of things can people do? You talk about planting shrubs and trees. Are you also talking about rechanneling the river, or what can you do when you're in a populated area?
Yeah, in the bigger picture of the Logan River, and you're right, there's so many rivers that in Utah that follow the same pattern where they come out of the mountains, they go right through the towns that are built at the bottom of the river where they come out of the mountains. And certainly planting is something that the residents can do to help stabilize the bank. But there are also potentially some other opportunities to pull back the bank in some areas and allow the river a little more room to move back and forth. As the river comes out of the mountains, where it's at a very high gradient and a steep level, it hits these lower gradient areas when it exits the mountain, and it wants to slow down and it wants to move back and forth. And we've kept it from doing that with our channelization and a lot of the concrete walls that we might build along the river. But there are really better ways to allow that river to move back and forth within its natural channel, but still provides you with some protection from flooding.
So what happens when you aren't allowing the river to move back and forth?
Okay. What happens there is you sort of create a chute. So in the upper parts below First Dam, what the river's doing is it's picking up gravel and sand. And because we've hardened the banks through much of town, it just shoots that gravel and sand downstream to some point where the river finally starts to slow down. And that, for us, tends to be right around the golf course. And so what happens there is the river drops all of this material that it's been carrying, these gravels, and then it sort of creates its own dam in those areas. So when we have these floods, that's exactly what happens. It dumps all this gravel, and then the river runs into it, and it starts to spread out across the valley in places where we really don't want it to go.
With the population, I can't imagine you're able to move the river that much if you're going right through a neighborhood. So what do you do to mitigate that?
Yeah. So
how do you get that river to drop some of that stuff in place?
Yeah. Very good question. So what we would try to do is have some very targeted projects that would allow the river to move in places where there aren't houses right now. So we have some opportunities up by Stewart Nature Park where we could allow the river to move a little bit there, potentially drop some of these sands and gravels out. We're also losing some of the bank at Stewart Park, so we'd want to do some restoration there that pulls the area back a little bit, plants some native vegetation to protect that bank from being lost. Because when you're losing the bank, that means you're adding gravel to the river. So the more we can reduce the amount of gravel that's going into the river at those upper areas, the upper part of the reach of the river, the less work we'll have to do farther down.
When I'm on top of Mendon Peak and I look down onto the Bear River, you can tell everywhere that river has been, where the oxbows are. Even if there's not an oxbow, you can tell the indentation into the land of where that river once was. And it's all over the place. You see this back and forth. I would imagine the Logan River used to do that at one point, go back and forth across what we call the island area.
Yes. Yeah. So once you get down sort of past the commercial areas, past Main Street, that's where the river really started to slow down and meander back and forth. It probably kept most of its channel similar to where it is now in the upper reaches through the residential section. But then once it got lower, you can actually still see a lot of those old oxbows and side channels and some of those things. And those are lower down on the river where we have more opportunity to work, are areas where we might try to move the river back into some of those oxbows in some places and create some large pools that would capture some of this gravel to get it out of the system from creating floods.
So what does a homeowner do when they're at this workshop? Why don't we talk about the workshop a little bit and what they'll learn about it?
Yeah, so at the workshop, we're going to have experts from NRCS, from Utah State, people that are experts in learning how to plant and care for trees and shrubs. We'll have a horticulture extension and master gardeners there. And so it's just an opportunity for folks to show up and learn about where to plant these trees strategically in the riparian zone. Because the riparian zone, you know, like Frank said, it's basically from the river to the upland areas. But there are lots of different sections of the riparian zone where different trees are going to do better really close to the edge of the river, and other trees are going to do better just a little bit further up the bank. So it's not a science class. This is a fun opportunity for folks to come pick up a shovel and learn how to plant and care for these species and where strategically to plant a choke cherry along the bank of a river. You know, folks will come to Black Hawk Park, and there's an area, it's actually the Blacksmith Fork River that we're going to be working on that day, but they can look at the Blacksmith Fork River and say, well, gee, my backyard sort of looks like this. So if this was my backyard, I would plant this choke cherry here and a couple water birch here and a golden currant in this area. And at the same time, they can work to restore this little section of the Blacksmith Fork River that is in need of some restoration. So it's, you know, it's a win-win for folks. It can benefit not only the entire community, but just, you know, by taking home some free trees and shrubs, you're going to be benefiting the entire watershed.
So I'm thinking of a neighborhood of homes, and they're a quarter to a third of an acre each, and each have riverfront property. does it do any good for you to do something if your neighbors don't do something as well?
Things are going to work better if we're all working together. Absolutely, it's better to do something rather than nothing at all. But how great would it be for you to go knock on your neighbor's door Friday night before this workshop and say, hey, let's carpool down and go learn about how to plant trees and shrubs, and also take home 10 or 15 of them and we can do it together in our backyard. It's a great opportunity for us to work together as a community, to meet our neighbors, and just to learn about the benefits of buffering our property from potential catastrophic floods like we actually have had. So yes, we are stronger together if we're doing this as a team and as a neighborhood. So I urge folks to, you know, if you're sitting at home and listening to this and going, man, I wonder if my neighbor knows about this, but he has a concrete wall. Well, bring him, because you know what? This Logan River Task Force is out to help community members learn about taking holistic approaches to riparian restoration. So if you have poured a concrete wall because you're nervous about your backyard eroding into the Logan River, don't worry about it. Show up to the workshop, show up to the public meeting, and learn about alternatives for taking out that concrete wall. I think Frank would agree with me. The city is very supportive about for homeowners that are interested in looking at alternatives to old ways of thinking about channelizing the river.
So the city's not concerned about going in and saying, okay, you have to do this. I think that's one of the things that a lot of people would be concerned about.
Absolutely.
Am I going to be told I have to do something if show up to this workshop?
Absolutely not. And that's why we have these public meetings. You know, we have worked really hard on this task force to give the public a big opportunity to have a say. And that's why we plan these public meetings after work. They're efficient. They have opportunities for folks to speak to the engineers, to the consultants directly and say, I'm concerned about this, or I think this is a great idea. So this public meeting, I'm not sure if we mentioned it, but there's a public meeting on April 21st at 6 p.m. at the Logan River Golf Course. So it's a perfect opportunity for folks to come and voice their concerns and also offer support for ideas that they think are an excellent approach to the restoration that we're talking about here.
And then the workshop will be 2 days later on Saturday from 1 to 3 at the Black Hawk Park in Logan.
Yes.
So tell me, what is the number one thing that someone could do, Frank, if they don't know where to start, they come to the workshop, but they just want to do one thing, or maybe they can't come to the workshop because they live in Springdale or somewhere on the other end of the state. What's the number one thing they can do to help improve the riparian area in their backyard?
So I think in your backyard, the most important thing you can do is provide some native vegetation that is riparian adapted. So trees, shrubs, we also list some grasses and wildflowers that they could plant. Megan has developed Taking Care of Streams and Rivers in Cache Valley, a booklet that's available through Forestry Extension and the city. So if people are interested in having some of this vegetation in their backyard, they can get a hold of this publication. It's very nicely done, and it will explain the different types of vegetation that we recommend planting and some of the where to plant. Is it stuff you want to plant right next to the river? Is it stuff you want to plant a little bit higher up the bank? And it'll talk about how the vegetation grows. Is this going to be a great big tree in your backyard, or is it going to be a small shrub in your backyard? Is it going to sink a great big taproot, or is it going to have roots up along the just beneath the soil? So it provides a lot of that information for folks. And it also tells them about some of the wildlife that would come in and use that vegetation.
And what color flowers are going to be, you know? And
I was just going to say, I noticed the flower colors on here. So is this booklet available online?
Yes. And I feel like as the Forestry Extension educator for the state, my job is to get this booklet in as many hands as people that want it. And the Logan City has been so supportive of printing them. And so if you want one, go to forestry.usu.edu. And either send me an email or look for it on the website. You might have to do a tiny bit of digging, but I just suggest send me an email. I will be at the gardener's market when it opens in here in Logan, handing them out every week, or at least they'll be on the table, the extension, USU extension table. I'm working with master gardeners in Cache Valley to get this as in the hands of as many people as possible. So my job is to be the liaison between the scientific community and the public. So I'm here to serve the public, and this is one way that I've found that, you know, it's a pretty simple guidebook. It's not a scientific journal article. It tells you, if I plant this tree in my backyard, it's going to attract or it's great for hummingbirds, and it's going to bloom orange in the fall, and it's going to grow 15 feet tall. That is the extent of this guidebook. It's written for homeowners. It's written for the public. It's written for my mom, so my mom can understand it, you know, and that's what I was going for.
And I'll have the link that you provided to me.
Perfect.
I'll put that on the Zesty Garden webpage so people can also link to it from there.
They're absolutely free, and you can have as many as you want.
What is some of the ecological value that will take place? If I put in some shrubs, if maybe I change the bank so it's not quite so steep, what am I going to see in the long run?
Well, of course, one of the things you're going to see is less flood danger by putting the vegetation there. And what happens is when the river does flood, the river is still going to come up. But what happens is it hits all this vegetation and it slows down, takes some of the energy out of the current that's coming down the river. And that actually helps drop out some of the soil, basically, that the river is carrying, and it enriches your backyard. So it is the protection that you get. That's one of the functions that the vegetation provides. And it also, as Megan was suggesting, provides a lot of habitat for wildlife. One of the reasons that I'm most interested in this is I'm a bird guy. I love birds. And so the more vegetation that you have that provides things like flowers for hummingbirds and berries for robins and orioles and that sort of thing.
You want to see more western tanagers flying through there, don't you?
Exactly. And the types of vegetation that we're recommending, often they provide not just the food, but they also provide the cover for the birds to hide in from their predators and that sort of thing. So that, to me, is one of the functions of this vegetation, is not just holding the bank, but also providing wildlife in your backyard, as well as providing some beauty in your backyard. I'm sure you've seen red osier dogwoods along the river, this just striking red-barked shrub that nothing else looks like. It's such a fantastic-looking plant. When it's in bloom with its white blooms, and it has sort of a maroon leaves in the fall, just the colors that come out of that one plant are just amazing. So to have something like that in your backyard, I think, also increases your property value.
And then you have the red stems in the winter.
Yeah, so even in the winter, you've got a lot of color coming out of red osier dogwood.
So what did this all come about? Why is this project happening now?
Okay. Well, back in 2014, the city did a lot of work along the Logan River that some of the residents didn't really approve of. And so we actually got a group together of various university professors from the Wildland Resources and the Watershed Resources departments to talk with the city about sort of state-of-the-art river restoration as it is now. And the city has been very willing to listen to what we're saying. And we've been able now to actually develop a long-term, what we call a conservation action plan for the river, that looks down the road and says, what can we do now to make this river provide for better ecological and social values to this community? It's our river. We want the community to be able to have input to this, and that's one of the reasons we're having these public meetings. But I think we've made leaps and bounds and strides in terms of taking what we used to do is just try to run these rivers through town as fast as we possibly could. And now we're realizing that there's a lot more value to these rivers, to people socially, to the wildlife, to the system of the river itself, that we don't want to just shoot it through town anymore in a lot of cases. We want to let it come the way it wants to come and let it move a little bit and provide some of the natural vegetation there.
Could this be the basis for a jumping off point and say moving up into the canyon maybe? Because the lower part of the canyon's been pretty channeled.
Yeah.
And could this also then be transplanted to somewhere else in the state to another river.
Yeah. So we really started working on the Logan River in Logan because the city was such a willing participant in that. The city was able to get a $600,000 grant from the Department of Environmental Quality. They're matching that with $400,000 of their own to do some of these restoration projects that we'll be talking about on the 21st of April. And so this was what we saw as the easiest place to start, the first bite of the elephant, as it were, is the Logan River right in town. But we're also very interested in the agricultural areas below 10th West, running all the way out to the Pacific Corps properties near Cutler Marsh. But that we do see as sort of the first part of the watershed. The Logan is the main part of the watershed, but the Blacksmith Fork is a major contributor to the watershed. And certainly upstream of First Dam, there's a lot of important things going on up there as well. So yes, I do see that this would hopefully be a springboard to expanding our conservation action plan and our restoration efforts, both upstream and in other tributaries within the valley.
Because it's certainly this, it would be the same elements no matter where you're working.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And we certainly encourage people that live on the Blacksmith Fork or the Little Bear or the Bear to come in and see what we're recommending for plantings for riparian vegetation on their properties as well.
Okay. And I've been talking with Megan Dentonmeyer. She's USU's Forestry Extension Educator. And Frank Howe, he's with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. He's the university liaison. He's also USU Adjunct Associate Professor. We've been talking about taking care of streams and rivers. And there is a public meeting on April 21st, Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Logan River Golf Course. But then there's also a workshop where you can come and learn what you can do to help upgrade the riparian area in your own backyard. It's April 23rd from 1 to 3 p.m. That's a Saturday. It's at the Blackhawk Park in Logan. Anything else that you'd like to add to the conversation?
I'd like to mention that the Blackhawk Park restoration project is going to be occurring at the south end of the soccer fields. So Blackhawk Park is a big soccer sort of area. But yeah, if you just walk to the south end of the soccer fields and find the little river, the Blacksmith Fork River, we'll be there. So, and you can show up for any amount of time on that Saturday from 1 to 3. And we look forward to having you there.
And I'd also like to mention too that that public meeting on the 21st of April at 6 at the Logan River Golf Course is more to talk about unveiling ideas for river restoration projects, both through the residential area and then down along the golf course. So we're actually going to present some potential projects that would demonstrate how we can improve and enhance the river values, both ecologically and socially. And we'll talk a little bit about planting, but we'll also talk about these ideas of allowing the river to move around within the floodplain and how we can actually create some of those with projects that we would do that are engineering projects.
Okay. Frank and Megan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Thank you.